Well, we've got to meet some famous people today. Maybe you have heard of them. Maybe you haven't. But a whole cast of characters. And it's going to be a challenge for me. And I almost felt like this week I was biting off a little too much with this next story in this new series that we just started last week that we're calling Old School. And we've been spending a lot of time in the New Testament of the Bible lately, and I felt like, you know what, we need to dip into those classic stories of faith from the First Testament, that we often call the Old Testament, and learn what we can from the heroes of faith that the New Testament looks up to and describes in the book of Hebrews as those that exemplified true faith. Now, faith is confidence in what we hope for and assurance about what we do not see. It's a pretty good definition of faith. This is what the ancients were commended for. And the writers of Hebrews goes on for the rest of the chapter, just a laundry list of famous characters, Bible heroes. Some we hear about a lot. Some it's like, whoa, never heard of that one. All through the Old Testament that became famous for their faith, for the way they trusted God. And what we find out as we look at them, these were just ordinary, regular people. Last Sunday we looked at Gideon and how God called him to do great things, even though he was just a kind of a cowardly hiding out, intimidated by the Midianites, all the forces of terror around him, and how God looked at him and saw him as this incredible, mighty warrior of faith and proved it to Gideon and to all those around him. And he partnered with God to do great things to bring freedom and renewed hope for Israel. And so many heroes of faith that Hebrews 12 says, hey, we don't have to look that far, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses through all these stories in the First Testament. Let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. So I hope we're having a little fun this summer looking at these Old Testament stories, these First Testament stories. And I talked about last Sunday how we're going to hit some famous characters and hopefully some not so famous ones that we don't hear of every day. And there's a little, one of the most incredible stories tucked away in a little book called Esther, about a little orphan girl that became world famous throughout the land that her people were caught into. And the famous line, we're going to kind of work backwards from this famous line, that this sweet, cute little girl who was orphaned, lost her parents, and was raised by her cousin, comes to a place where she's got to make a choice. Is she going to answer this call that's going to require immense courage, that she would say, I'll do it, and if I perish, I perish? What would bring her to that sort of a circumstance? But the book of Esther is there because it's where the great feast of Purim began and is celebrated and commemorated. And if you have any Jewish background or Jewish friends or relatives, the Jewish festival of Purim is celebrated every year on the 14th of the Hebrew month of Adar, which is in the kind of late February, early March time of the year. And it commemorates the salvation of the Jewish people in ancient Persia when they had been captured and enslaved and brought to another land and were under the rule of the kingdom of Persia. They were saved from a horrendous plot. This is pulled out of the book of Esther, to destroy, kill, and annihilate all the Jews, young and old, infants and women, in a single day, and to plunder their goods. Because of how God worked and Esther worked along with him, Well, let's see. And so, but this takes place in a time in history, again, where Israel was in exile and serving under a foreign kingdom. This is the same time, and we kind of joked around a little bit last week because of the story of Gideon's 300, that was the original 300 story that happened in Gideon. Although the famous, the one that you might be more familiar with, that's been, you know, had a couple movies made about it, the 300, the famous battle between the Persians and the Spartans, the battle of, I can never pronounce
Thermopylae.
It, Thermopylae, thank you, where 300 Spartans held out, you know, a battle against tens of thousands of Persians. And so this is the time in history when Persia, under King Xerxes, was just ruling everything and having their way everywhere. And one of the kingdoms that they were dominating was the kingdom of Israel that was under their power. So I've got a whole cast of characters to introduce to you, and as we kind of go through and follow along this story. Okay, so Morgan Freeman, who usually plays the role of God, is conspicuously missing in this book. So one of the very few books. What's another one that doesn't mention God by name in the book? Kind of interesting, because you see him and his hand implicitly working throughout the book, which is a little trivia thrown in there. So God's not in this one. Sorry, Morgan, you didn't get a role this time. But we got a crazy cast of characters. So we start off with Xerxes. And so if you saw 300, I thought they did an incredible job casting and fleshing out that role of Xerxes the Great, Xerxes I, the king of Persia who ruled in this time, was assassinated by one of his lead guys, like always seems to happen in 465. But the book of Esther starts off with this introduction. This is what happened during the time of Xerxes. The Xerxes, who ruled over 127 provinces stretching from India to Kush. And the way they cast them in the 300 is just this powerful, intimidating, a god among men. And just the fierceness and the power that he displays. And so chapter 1 of Esther goes on to explain, for a full 180 days, you've never partied until you partied with Xerxes. He displayed the vast wealth of his kingdom and the splendor and the glory of his majesty. When these days were over, the king gave another banquet lasting 7 days for all the people, from the least to the greatest, who were in the citadel of Susa. And so he's just showing off all of his wealth and majesty and just hits this crescendo of a final 7-day celebration where he gathers everybody from the poorest to the greatest to see his power and show off everything that he has with his last final cherry on top to show off the most exquisite, the most beautiful queen that any kingdom has ever laid their eyes on. On the 7th day, when King Xerxes was in high spirits from wine, he commanded to bring before him Queen Vashti, wearing her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and nobles, for she was lovely to look at. But when the attendants delivered the king's command, Queen Vashti refused to come. And the king became furious and burned with anger. So everything that happens from here on out is because the queen didn't feel like coming to the king's shindig and having to stand up there and just be objectified and shown off to all these boring, you know, visitors and members of royalty from other kingdoms and all around these provinces. No one really has the specific excuse to why she just didn't show up. She just somehow didn't feel like it. But I'm going to think it's probably somewhere along these lines. Vashti just doesn't show. And it just kills Xerxes. And he kind of panics. He's a little bit, what am I going to do? He calls his advisors together, and they actually have to come up with a law. Unless word gets out and wives start thinking that they can just do whatever they want and not listen to their husband, so they actually make a law that says from now on it's the law that wives have to listen to whatever their husbands, you know, and have to show up at the office Christmas party no matter what from here on out. And so, and we need a new queen because this one just isn't working out. So what do you do when you need a new queen? Time to throw a beauty pageant. So this is what they did. They go, they just search the kingdom all around and bring the most beautiful and talented women into the citadel. Let a search be made for beautiful young virgins for the king. Let the king appoint commissioners in every province of his realm to bring all these beautiful young women into the harem. Then let the young woman who pleases the king be the queen instead of that evil Vashti that won't do what she's supposed to. And so they round up all these girls and they put them through the paces. I mean, there's all sorts of things they have to do and things they have to accomplish and just all these trials and things that they go through. But the one girl, and it wasn't during the swimsuit issue, it was really during the talent competition that caught Xerxes' eye. We don't really know, but it just says that the king was attracted to Esther more than to any of the other women, and she won his favor and approval. I think she must have had some, you know, to juggle while riding a unicycle. I mean, I don't know what it was. Somehow she attracted his attention, so he set a royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. And so let's find out a little bit about who Esther was, because I mean, there's, you know, thousands of women, you know, that were in this competition. And so how does this one little orphan girl get to be the new queen? And so, because she didn't go looking for this. Kind of like, I mean, that's how Princess Bride starts off, right? I mean, they're, you know, looking around for, you know, the count is out riding throughout the countryside looking for, you know, if you've read the book, The Princess Bride, they go into much detail, and I think they stole it all from Esther. You know, looking around for somebody to be the best possible queen for the kingdom. But what they didn't know about Esther is her nationality and her background, that she was of the Jews, this other foreign kingdom that had been captured and basically uprooted and brought into exile in the land of Persia. Esther had not revealed her nationality and family background because Mordecai, her cousin who raised her, said, "Hey, you're not gonna, you know, if that comes up in any of the interviews, just kind of, don't mention anything about where you're from." Every day, he walked back and forth near the courtyard of the harem to find how little Esther was and what was happening to her. And so this very dedicated uncle, Mordecai, was always looking after her, kind of mentor her through and advise her, you know, when all this, you know, when you go through all this, and I'm skipping a lot of detail to kind of summarize this whole story, is don't let them know that you're Jewish. Okay? Just, who knows what they might do. And so, okay, a little background on Mordecai. Mordecai had become a little bit of a secret patriotic hero. He was always trying to check up on Esther and keep an eye on her at the king's gate. One day, during the time he was sitting at the king's gate, two of the king's officers who guarded the doorway became angry and conspired to assassinate King Xerxes. But Mordecai found out about the plot told it, got a note passed on to Queen Esther, who in turn reported it to the king, giving credit to Mordecai. And a little celebration's made, and notes are written down in the king's national journal, and Mordecai is celebrated for that. And so, but it kind of gets forgotten about over time. And in the meantime, and all these things are really, it's like a whole mosaic or a puzzle of events and people are being put together in this story. And they all kind of have to fit together for what God's going to do. In the meantime, one of the king's lieutenants gets promoted. A guy named Haman. King Xerxes honored Haman, son of Hammedatha, the Agagite, elevating him and giving him a seat of honor higher than all of the other nobles. All the king's officials would now bow down before Haman to show him respect whenever he passed by, for so the king had commanded. And so now you've got one of the king's henchmen, so to speak, in this position of power. And all of a sudden, Mordecai, who had gotten some positive attention, now draws some very negative attention to him. The best modern-day example I can think of is up on the screen, but Mordecai refused to bow down or show Haman any respect. And just like our old buddy Colin Kaepernick, out of protest for something he believed in. See, Mordecai, as a Jew, believed that he shouldn't bow down to any human for any reason. He would only bow to the one true God. And so he, all of a sudden now, was drawing the ire of Haman and the other officials, because all his attention was on him. And just like Kaepernick upset a whole world around him. You know, some people were excited about that. I personally like a guy that zigs when everybody else zags, because it takes guts. It takes courage. And whether you agree with how somebody goes about something or not, when they put themselves in a place of risk because of what they believe in, I mean, that is powerful. And so here you've got Mordecai setting himself up the same way Cap can't even get a job. He's been to a Super Bowl and he can't even get a job as a backup quarterback anymore. And so he took a risk. He stepped out there, and he's paying the price for it. And so Mordecai is now going to see what kind of price living for his principles and standing up to the powers that be is going to bring on. But when Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel down or pay him any honor, he was enraged. Haman goes ballistic. Yet having learned who Mordecai's people were, he scorned the idea of killing only Mordecai. Forget just killing one guy. That's not good enough. I'm going to go after his entire people. Instead, Haman looked for a way to destroy all Mordecai's people, the Jews, throughout the whole kingdom. And Haman goes, I mean, he goes Adolf before there was an Adolf on this entire people of Jews. So you can see why the Feast of Purim is so important to the people of Judea. I was just talking with one of the guys as we were setting up from Community of Christ, who was telling me that he's been to the tombs of Esther and Mordecai that are in that are still venerated and celebrated today because of the history involved. But Purim means lots in ancient Persian. The holiday was named since Haman, what he did was he just said, okay, pick a day, and he just rolled the dice to determine when he would carry out the scheme of wiping everybody out, and his goal, this was the one thing he really wanted to happen. It had to be in one day. We're going to round them all up, and we're going to take them all one single day. And the reason Purim is celebrated on that 14th day is because the dice came up with 13. And so it was the 13th day of the month that all this was going to build to and happen. And so, and when it didn't, it was that next day, the 14th, that was full of celebration. And so, but we're not out of the woods yet. Because it's Mordecai that comes to Esther, who's in this place of safety and anonymity in the palace, and says, look, you've got to do something about what's going on. You've seen the law that's been passed. You see how they're going to start rounding everybody up. For if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place. Listen to the faith in Mordecai. It's like God's not going to forget his people. Something's going to happen. God's going to come through somehow. But if you don't do something, then you're not going to benefit from it. And we're going to have a huge, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that are going to be lost, including you and your family. You and your father's family will perish. In other words, all of us, our name's going to go by the wayside if you don't step up and do something. God will somehow preserve his people. It's just not going to happen in the land of Persia. And who knows, little orphan Esther, could this be the reason? Was it because you could twirl that baton so well? Or was God somehow behind placing you in this position of power and influence? It's no accident you won that whole contest. It's no accident you caught the eye of Xerxes. And who knows, but you have come to your royal position for such a time as this. Come on, Esther, here's your time to shine. You could save your whole people. You're in the same palace with the guy that makes these decisions. Go for it. And what does Esther do? She completely freaks out. She's all, wait, you're crazy. You don't know how this works, Mordecai. I mean, it's like life in the palace isn't just you do whatever you want. You've got to be invited. In fact, there's a law that I had to study and memorize that you don't just go uninvited into the king's court. One does not simply walk into the king's inner court. The penalty is instant death. If anyone, even the queen, approaches the king uninvited. And so Esther's got to think about this. And Mordecai says, look, I'm going to start spreading the word to everybody to just fast and pray. But you are our only hope, Esther. And if you don't think this happened, you know, by some sort of plan, think again. And so Esther gathers herself and says, okay, I'll fast and pray. And she comes to this place where she says, I will go to the king even though it is against the law. And the famous phrase, and if I perish, I perish. And she takes this leap of faith. Well, we know, because we've got this feast of Purim to celebrate, that she lived to tell about it. But it is the most quirky way that she did. And I'm not going to tell you how. Just like last week with Gideon, I didn't want to tell you the amazing, quirky, creative way that God gets 300 slacker Israelites in Gideon, out of Gideon's army of over 30,000. He whittles them down to 300 to beat a Midianite army of 135,000. Did anybody take the time this week Last week I said, okay, your homework is to go read that part in the book of Judges to find out how in the world that happened. And so this week, your homework is to find out how in the world Esther, the day she happened to set foot in the king's court, didn't have her head whacked off as soon as she did. Not telling. I told you you already knew it's a happy ending. But how did it get there? Go dig for it. It's crazy. It's like no way. It's like even though God isn't specifically mentioned by name, how else could that have happened? All these characters, all these puzzle pieces coming together. There's one last puzzle piece that you get to figure out on your own this week. But here's what I really want to talk about right now. Each one of you maybe didn't win a beauty contest, Pete, but maybe you don't feel like you're in a special position or a unique place. Or maybe you feel like, hey, I earned my way here. I fought hard to get to this place in my work, in my career. I put a lot of time and effort and energy and creativity to get here. If you really look at the breadcrumb trail that got you to wherever you are, whether it's the neighborhood you live in, or the job you're in, or the family, or the friends, or the connections you have, there's some quirky stuff that's happened. If you really take the time to look at it, it's like, wait a second, what's going on here? There's a reason that you live on the street you live on. There's a reason you work where you do. There's a reason you're connected biologically or otherwise with the family and extended family and friendships that you have. I'm telling you, from Gideon and just from Esther, and we've got many more stories coming up in this series, God is not a God of accidents. He is a God of interconnected, creative little puzzle pieces that get put together. So at just the right time, amazing things can happen. So where have you been placed? Whether it's where you live or where you work or who you live with, where have you been placed for such a time as this? In other words, what the book of Esther shows us is that we're just not accidentally, randomly going about life just kind of, you know, just one day after another, trying to slog it through without any sense of purpose. Every day is filled with a very specific purpose and opportunity. And when you just look down the street that you live on, there's a reason you're there. There's something in that neighborhood that needs you. There's someone that needs you. Wherever you're working, it's not an accident that you got that job. You have the opportunity. Now, just like Mordecai said, hey, God's going to do his good work some way, somehow. But you're in a position to partner with him. If Esther didn't answer the call, God, even though he put all that together, couldn't have done what he did in that unique way. Start to realize, hey, there's a reason I'm here. What is that reason? And opening ourselves up to that. All of a sudden now we're part of a mission. We're partners with the God of the universe bringing in His good purposes around us. Recently, just want to share this real quick. Some friends of ours are moving into a new neighborhood, and it was interesting hearing them talk about a letter that they shared with the homeowner that they're buying from, and how their hope was when, you know, and if anybody's been in the housing market lately, you know how cutthroat it is and how hard it is to how competitive it is. And what seemingly touched these homeowners was this family's desire to really put down roots in this neighborhood and move their businesses into this neighborhood and really be part of bringing something special from their lives into this place. And I was thinking, and it's like, man, we all have that opportunity wherever we're at. God has put us there for a reason. And are we just kind of doing our own thing and kind of playing it safe? Like Esther wanted to. She didn't want to speak up. But once she felt Mordecai's strength come alongside of her, and once she relied on God, fasting and prayer, she realized, hey, what's the worst that's going to happen? If I perish, I perish. I don't think any of us are facing those kinds of consequences in our daily challenges. What's the worst that's going to happen if I go down the street? We just had some new neighbors move in on our street. What's the worst that's going to happen if we walk down to the street with a plate of chocolate chip cookies and say, welcome to the neighborhood? We're allergic to chocolate. How's it going? I mean, what's the worst that can happen if we just kind of step out and make a little bit of an effort in the place that God has positioned us? What position and what influence do you have in your neighborhood, your workplace, and in your family? It's no accident that God has given you that. So email me this week when you find out that missing puzzle piece. It's quirky. It's very similar to Gideon's last puzzle piece, which is kind of interesting. And so funny the way that God works. Well, let me say a little prayer as Keith and the team come up to bring us into some more worship. Lord, thank you for this amazing story of Esther. And thank you for all the history in this and all the drama. And it's one of the scarier, intense stories in the Bible, even though it's all centered around this sweet little girl who you position in this amazing place. And she takes the step of faith to follow you. And so, Lord, let us know how to take that step. Let us recognize that we're all in very special places. Lord, let us partner with you. And so I just pray that this week everybody would look at their neighborhood differently, their workplace differently, their friends and family differently. It's no accident I'm in this family. Some of us might wish otherwise, but you have a plan and a purpose and a reason that you positioned us there. That cubicle, that office space, wherever it is, Lord, there's a reason. And you want to do good things in and through us for such a time as this. So we pray you to do that good work. Amen. Pete's got another new song for us that really connects to